Hello everybody and welcome to the Infinite Potential podcast. This is the third episode. My name is Alex Hickman.
And I'm Ross Wood.
Today we had on a lady called Alice Coppolit. She is a vegan and a fruitarian who is very scientific in her approach. She puts across how she feels that veganism and that lifestyle is beneficial for the human being. I definitely recommend diving into it wholeheartedly and making of it what you will.
Yeah, I hadn't even heard of fruitarianism up until probably 1 month ago, but listening to this lady speak today has definitely shared a lot of knowledge on it, and I think if people listen with an open mind, I think they could gain a lot of information from it.
If you'd like to follow us on Facebook, YouTube and Instagram, that'd be fantastic. And also subscribe to us on iTunes, it does mean a hell of a lot. Have a great day.
Hey, Alice. So, tell us a bit about yourself. How have you got into this line of work? How have you got into fasting and the mucusless diet system?
Hi, guys. It's been a funny journey, really. I've kind of been on a journey of healing and detoxing probably for about 10 years. And it all started really from kind of just wanting to lose weight initially. So when I was about 17, 18, I kind of started looking into dieting and very quickly figured out that for me, eating bread and eating carbs instantly made me put on weight. So I kind of pretty much eliminated most carbs quite early on. And I ate what I would consider to be a kind of a paleo style diet, where I would eat quite a lot of meat, quite a lot of dairy. I know that's not strictly paleo, but very little by way of grains. And I would also eat quite a lot of fruit, but not, it was more like a snack. I would never have fruit meals or anything like this. But I got into juicing again when I was trying to lose a bit of weight while I was at university. And it's just been a really gradual process. But I think for me, the real moment when it clicked was at around the time, maybe, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, when I started meditating, started, you know, practicing yoga more seriously and started reading up on kind of spiritual texts and really began to understand the connection between the body and the mind. And I quickly came to see how the food I was putting in my body was affecting my mind and my emotions. And yeah, that was essentially the beginning of my journey.
Yeah. So when did you, how long were you on the paleo style eating for?
To be honest, I'm Eastern European. So I grew up in Bucharest in Romania. I'm also half Russian. So my family pretty much subsisted on a diet of dumplings, you know, meat dumplings. Yeah. Eggs, cheese, you know, pork, barbecued meat. And we'd eat quite a lot of fresh fruits and vegetables as well, kind of in the summer. But it was a diet really heavy in meat and dairy. And it was only really around, like I said before, sort of the age of sort of 17, 18, when kind of my hormones had kicked in. And because I was, you know, skinny as a bean when I was, you know, when I was younger. And then when I went through puberty, I started putting on some weight and suddenly the food I was eating started affecting my body, whereas before I could pretty much just eat anything I wanted. So it kind of from the age of 18, I would say, until about maybe 3 or 4 years ago. Well, 4 years ago, I became vegan. So until 4 years ago, I'd say I was eating that kind of diet. Yeah.
Just on top of that, would you say that the kind of spiritual calling came first, or was it the diet that had the transition before the...
It's difficult to say, actually, but I did. So about 5 years ago, I did my first Vipassana course. I don't know if you guys know what Vipassana is. Yeah, it's for your listeners who maybe might not know, it's a 10-day silent meditation retreat where they teach you meditation in the style of the Buddha, as taught by the Buddha. And I was still eating meat and stuff like this when I went on my first Vipassana course. And they feed you vegan food while you're there. And I have to admit, before I went, I was almost more scared about the vegan food that I was going to be eating than about the 10 days of silence and about all the meditation, just because I was so deeply attached to meat and me eating meat was such a part of my identity. I really loved it. Like, I would eat meat for both lunch and dinner every day. You know, I was really into it. And I was surprised actually by how good I felt while I was at the Vipassana course on the vegan diet. And so yeah, it's very difficult for me to say which came first, because I'd kind of been juicing for quite a few years and I'd replaced my morning breakfast with a fruit and vegetable juice. I'd been doing that since probably the age of about 23. So unknowingly, I'd kind of been intermittent fasting for quite a few years. So it's difficult to say whether that led to me kind of waking up a little bit and finding out about Buddhism, or whether it happened the other way around. But everything's interconnected, isn't it?
It is, you are. Of course. So yoga, was that happening previous to the 5 years that you've been vegan, or after you've started eating fruit and veg?
So yoga I've been practicing for about 10 years now, but to begin with, it was just, you know, sessions at my local Virgin Active gym, you know, lunchtime sessions at work. It was just quite kind of casual and not very deep, shall we say. And I then started, when I moved house, I moved to Hackney in London, and I started attending a hot yoga studio there, which initially had been just a Bikram studio. So for about a year, I did Bikram classes, and I found them incredibly beneficial. I found sweating and, you know, purging lots of toxins during quite an intense kind of workout. I just felt so peaceful and calm afterwards. But really, again, it wasn't a very deep study of yoga. But after about a year, the yoga studio stopped being affiliated with Bikram. So continued to be a hot yoga studio, but the lady who owned it kind of started doing her own thing. And then it became a bit more spiritual, and she recommended a few texts for me to read. And that's kind of how I got into it. So I would say seriously practicing yoga for about maybe 4 or 5 years, but I would say authentic yoga I only discovered about 2-3 years ago when I met my now yoga teacher when I was in Bali.
Right. Okay. What were the texts that you were recommended to read?
Well, the first one is the Patanjali Yoga Sutras, which is kind of the classic text. The Bhagavad Gita, which again is just a classic text. The Upanishads. Osho actually has some really good commentaries on the Upanishads. So I've read probably 3 or 4 books by him on various Upanishads. Anything by Osho, I would highly recommend to any of your listeners. He's just incredible. Yeah. I read quite a lot of Ram Dass books about his journey to India. And I've always been quite very interested in plant medicines and psychedelics. And he had a really interesting experience with LSD. And it was pretty much the gateway for spirituality for him. So really enjoyed some of his books. There's a really famous one by him called Be Here Now, which I highly recommend. I was also recommended a few books on Buddhism, so just kind of books about the Buddha's life and how to meditate, stuff like this. There's also an amazing book that was one of the earliest texts that got me into kind of spirituality by Matthieu Ricard, who is a French Buddhist monk, and he has very close ties to the Dalai Lama. And he wrote a book called How to Be Happy, or A Guide to Happiness, something like that. And lots of studies were carried out on him, and he was basically the happiest man in the world. You know, they put all these electrodes to his head, and, you know, most of us, there's kind of a scale of happiness, and most of us are somewhere on this kind of bell curve, and he was like here or something. He was just completely off the scale. And his book was also really transformative for me. I learned a lot about patterns and mental conditionings and things that keep us trapped in kind of killer loops, you know, like stop us from being able to live our true potential.
When was the first time that you'd heard about the mucusless diet? That the first I'd heard of that was about 3 or 4 weeks ago, when yourself and Toby mentioned fasting and that. I've done a lot of fasting myself in the past, but I'd never I've never looked into that. And dry fasting scares me to death, because water, I mean, I really need a lot of water, you know. So that's like, I don't know, 10 hours without water, not too sure, you know. But obviously the results seem to be working. So when was the first time that you looked into that?
I found out about it about approximately 2 years ago, I'd say, the mucusless diet healing system. And what happened for me was, so I first became vegan, I was dating a guy at the time who had done a couple of 10-day retreats in Thailand, fasting retreats at these kind of detox centers. So I already knew about it, and I already knew he'd had amazing results. So after I'd been vegan for a few months, I started getting quite a lot of skin problems. So I've never really had skin problems in my life, but I started getting lots of pimples and blackheads, and no matter how much I scrubbed and no matter how much water I drank, it just wasn't going away. It was getting worse and worse. So I started doing some internet research and found out that basically what was happening was that I was detoxing quite heavily from all the kind of dairy and meat I'd eliminated from my diet. But my kidneys were kind of struggling with all of the filtration. So the skin, which is essentially known as the third kidney, because you know we process so many toxins through the skin, was completely overburdened, and it was struggling to kind of keep up with the toxic release that I was having. So I decided to do some water fasting to combat that, and I did 2 10-day water fasts probably within 12 months of each other and had absolutely amazing results. I then kind of got into raw foods and fruitarianism and practiced that for about a year, but kind of then went, I'm a constant kind of experimenter. So I'm always looking for new ways of understanding reality. When something isn't clicking, I'm always looking and experimenting to find out why. And I discovered a diet called Raw Till 4, which was very popular online, which is basically saying, look, you can be a fruitarian, but you know, for most people, this is really challenging. So just eat fruit throughout the day, be raw till 4, essentially, but you can have a cooked evening meal, so long as your evening meal consists mainly of carbohydrates. So they were basically saying, keep your fat really low, keep your protein really low, keep it vegan, but as long as it's carbs, you can basically eat anything you want. So after being completely raw vegan for a year, and obviously eating no grains, nothing cooked, I then started eating quite a lot of rice, quite a lot of pasta. And, you know, the people who were promoting this diet were lean as anything, you know, and they were saying you can eat all the carbs you want and still be super lean like us. And I totally fell for it. So for the next kind of 2-3 months, I was eating like, and they were saying, eat as much as you want, eat huge portions. And I was eating big bowls of rice, big bowls of pasta. And I'm not joking, I put on about 2 stone in about 6 weeks.
Sounds like the slimming that does.
Yeah, I completely ballooned. And it was very clear to me very quickly that their diet was not for me, that actually what they were saying was not based on something that I considered to be the highest truth. So I started doing some research, and my instinct was constantly calling me back towards fasting. But the people who were promoting this kind of raw till 4 lifestyle were very much against fasting. They were saying, if you fast, you're going to kill your metabolism. You're going to be weak. You know, fasting's not good for you. And there was just a real kind of fear mongering there. So there was a part of me that just didn't resonate with that, because I'd known I'd had such amazing results from the water fasting I'd done. And I'd also done, prior to this, a 33-day juice fast. And again, I'd had amazing results. Felt so energetic and needing less sleep, more clarity, just everything felt good in my life, you know. So my instinct kept calling me back towards fasting. So I started doing some research online, and that's when I came across the mucusless diet healing system, because Arnold Errett, the writer, also is a massive advocate of fasting, because fasting is essentially at the heart of the mucusless diet healing system practice. And he also wrote another book called Rational Fasting, which was that I also read at the same time. So
they go hand in hand together, do they? Yeah.
Oh yeah, very much so. It's at the heart of it. And actually, what Arnold Errett teaches is that everything that we eat, which isn't our species specific diet, which he concludes is fruit and tender leafy green vegetables, so starchless vegetables, anything else is not our ideal human diet, is below optimal, and the body recognizes it as such. So anytime we eat grains, meat, dairy, essentially even all cooked food to some extent, it has a level of sort of detriment effect on the body. Some things more than others, for instance. You know, you can eat some cashews or you can eat some dairy and they have different effects, but they're both kind of negative to some extent. And anything that you eat which is not optimal, the body creates mucus in order to cope with the fact that it's eating something unnatural. And over time, this mucus accumulates in the body and creates disease and a fertile ground for parasites and bacteria and toxins. And, you know, he goes really far. He actually goes to say that every single disease that we suffer as humans, everything that we consider a virus or, you know, even genetic diseases, all of these are just a result of accumulated toxemia that we've been suffering with since childhood. Yeah. And the only way to clear this is, first of all, stop taking in all the things that create mucus. And second of all, start fasting, because it's only through fasting, through ceasing digestion, that we actually give the body time to start eliminating the mucus.
Can I just go back a quick 2 minutes where you said,
sure.
The human specific diet is fruit. Now, obviously, we get told a lot of different stuff by a lot of different people. What justification is there for that to be true?
So the way I look at it, and you know, a lot of studies have confirmed this, is that us humans, we came from the tropics and we evolved in the tropics, and we then migrated and spread northwards and southwards, but you know, further towards colder climates. But if you actually look at the human evolution, the time that we've spent in Europe and the Americas and, you know, further south in the southern hemisphere is a tiny blip compared to the time that we spent in the tropics, where really the majority of our evolution took place. And as we migrated towards colder climates, we had to adapt to a diet where fruit isn't wildly abundant throughout the year. And at the same time, I think an ice age also took place. So no fruits or vegetables were available, and we were forced to start eating meat. But actually, the original human diet, and we see this from our physiology, we see this from our digestive tract, we see this from the way we are attracted to fruit, the way fruit is the only food that requires absolutely no preparation for it to be attractive to us. You know, you see a mango and it looks good, it's colorful, it's beautiful, it smells good. You know, it's perfectly placed on the tree where we can just pluck it with our hands and eat it. Like, it's clear to me that our physiology is made for eating fruit. And all other foods really are unnatural to us, and we have to cook them, we have to add condiments for them to be tasty to us, even for them to be acceptable to us. I mean, I can't imagine any of us literally biting into a carcass of an animal like a lion would do. It completely goes against our instincts. So to me, those instincts show to prove or point to what is our natural diet.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I think that makes a lot of sense what you've just said. But how would it fit in terms of infants and when children naturally come off their mother's breast milk? Would they start, does that apply to those as well? So a strictly fruit and vegetable diet, because obviously there's a lot of benefits to be taken from fats and proteins for physical growth. So how would it fit in there?
So actually, if we look at children, particularly really young children, we can actually see the human instincts very naturally playing out. So if you put, you know, a toddler in a room with a bunny, a bit of broccoli, and, you know, an apple, yeah, it's quite clear what the child's going to eat and what the child's going to play with. The toddler's not going to rip into the throat of the rabbit, and it's probably unlikely to start nibbling on the raw piece of broccoli. But the apple or the mango or the grapes or the banana are very appealing to the child. And actually, when we wean off babies off mother's milk, what do we give them? Fruit. You know, we cook down a bit of apple, we might put a bit of honey in there, but actually what we're feeding the child is really simple food, because that's all really that the baby can handle, you know, because they have a very delicate, very new system. If you start feeding a newborn baby, you know, diet high in salt, and it's been shown, I read just the other day, some poor parents who were just really ignorant, obviously didn't realize, they were just uneducated, fed their child, you know, 7-8 month old child crisps, you know, within a couple of months the baby was dead. They had no clue what they were doing. The diet was completely inappropriate for the child. Yeah. And really, the way that we wean children onto the food that we consider natural, you know, the dairies, the meats, the grains, is very gradually. And it's only by gradually introducing these foods that the body's actually able to take it on. If you literally fed raw meat to a baby, terrible things would happen, you know. And in terms, I should answer the second part of your question, in terms of the protein and fat needs of developing children, you know, I personally know fruitarian mothers who have brought up children that are fruitarian from birth. And some of these kids are some of the most healthy, awake, spiritually connected, energetic, present people I've ever met. Yeah. And it's clear to me that they have absolutely no developmental problems, and if anything, they haven't had a single disease their entire life. They didn't have any of the kind of so-called childhood diseases that we all get, and they are absolutely thriving. And you know, if you look at fruits, let's even leaving out vegetables, which are much higher in protein, you know, broccoli is something like 40 or 50%, yeah, you know, protein calorifically speaking. All fruits have between 5 and 10% fat. And some fruits much higher. So durian is probably about 20%. Avocado is between 50 and 80%, depending on the variety. And actually, we need very little fat and protein to live optimally. If you look at mother's milk, we have the lowest protein percentage human milk than any other mammal. So we are only 1%. Human mother's milk is only 1% protein versus, I think, 3.5 or 3.8% protein in cow's milk. Some animals are much higher. I think cats are almost 10% protein. And that is indicative of a truly carnivorous offspring, the fact that the protein in the milk is so different.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, just mention cholesterol as well. In terms of, I know mother's, I read in one article that mother's breast milk is, it's got one of the most abundant sources of cholesterol, as it has such a vital role in brain development. And where do you take beyond that?
I think that everything nature does is always perfect. So nature never makes a mistake. Everything is, you know, working in divine order. So the milk that every species creates for its offspring is ideal for the offspring. So the level of cholesterol that's present in mother's milk is exactly what the baby's brain and body needs for development. Yeah. However, I do think that we are weaning children off mother's milk a lot earlier than we should be.
Yeah.
So most fruitarian mothers that I know, and not necessarily, you know, 100% fruitarian, many kind of vegan mothers with a high fruit content sort of diet, they breastfeed their children until they were at least 2 or 3 years old. Some of them even until kind of 4 years old. And a lot of children are kind of almost artificially weaned. A lot of children would prefer to continue breastfeeding a lot longer. And if you allow children to intuitively continue doing it until they themselves say, I don't want it anymore, it will actually go on a lot longer. And a lot of these children that are breastfed to a much later age show much greater IQ and health and have, you know, stronger immune systems, all this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think a perfect combination of mother's milk and a little bit of fruit once the child is attracted to it. And again, the child will instantly tell you when it's ready to start trying some fruit. It will start reaching for the banana or reaching for the piece of watermelon. And that's, you know, nature knows best. So I have no doubt that just as everything is perfect in mother's milk, everything is perfect in fruit for our diet. So long as we eat a nice wide, you know, variety of different colored fruits, as long as we eat seasonally as much as we can, as long as the fruit we have is fresh, ripe, ideally tree ripened. You know, if you're eating really low quality fruit and if you're eating the same kind of fruit all the time, you might not get your needs, but I do believe that everything in nature is perfect. I don't think we need to supplement anything. It's perfectly created for us.
I agree with that. Yeah, 100%. I think one of the arguments that gets thrown at fruitarians in particular would be, for example, the Inuit, who's eaten fish and maybe certain animal meats purely for thousands of years, possibly millions of years, depending how far back, you know, whatever your belief is. I mean, surely over, I don't know, 100,000 years, let's get in the middle, surely over 100,000 years, there's going to be some adaptation within the human body that will be expecting, if you like, animal fats and animal proteins, do you think?
I think there's some truth in that because the body is always adapting to survive. But I don't think that the body, whenever we do things that are unnatural to the body is never going to adapt away from that. So, by way of example, let's say there's a fire and we're all cavemen and we're sitting there in front of the fire and we put our hand into the fire. Oh, it burns. You move your hand out of the fire. The body is never going to adapt to withstand the fire, you know, because it's something that is inherently bad for the body. So that the body instantly knows to pull the hand away. So even if you come from a family of, you know, people who constantly put their hand into the fire, you're not going to adapt to withstand fire because it's dangerous and bad for the body. In the same way, we're never going to adapt to a diet high in proteins and fats, which is inherently dangerous and damaging for the body. What does happen, though, is that over time, the body does everything it can to minimize and mitigate the damage. And you could argue that, you know, genetically, perhaps people who are more likely to cope well with a diet high in fats are more likely to, you know, to have offspring, and then their children perhaps would be less likely to suffer the extremes of the results of a high protein and fat diet, but it still doesn't completely mitigate it. And if anything, you know, we talked earlier about how the majority of our time, really 99.9% of our time, was spent in the tropics. And actually us, this is, you know, my belief anyway, the time that we've kind of migrated and moved to colder climates is only a very, very small and brief period. And some things do change. So some genetic traits like hair color, skin color, you know, these do change, and they change according to, you know, our geographical location and our lifestyle, etc. But these are things that can change very quickly. So within a few generations, a family can go from being brown-eyed to being blue-eyed and vice versa, right? But things like what is our species-specific diet and how the body reacts to certain foods, I genuinely don't think that this is something that has changed since we've lived in the tropics. And actually, if you look at the lifespan and general health of people like the Inuit people, they have a much lower life expectancy. They have really high depression and suicide rates, really high rates of addiction, substance abuse, you know, and obviously there are other factors at play here. The fact that, for instance, they don't have much access to sunlight, the fact that, you know, they're very remote, so perhaps they're not getting the kind of human interaction they need. But, you know, I do think that diet is largely the reason for those diseases and for the lower life expectancy, and also just the lower quality of life generally.
If we took that as absolute fact, from the tropics, that was our original diet, the fruitarian adopted style, where do you think it, we're pretty far off that today, in today's, especially the Western world, in certain parts. Would you say that, would you kind of impose that everybody can benefit from fruitarian diet, and what's the transition phase? Or do you think we should be pushing more towards everybody as a whole, globally, should be pushing more towards a meat-free diet? And do you think it would benefit everybody if we did so?
That's a very good question, and it's a long question, so I'll answer it in parts. Yeah. I think, first of all, on a spiritual level, I think everyone can gain from cutting out all animal products from their diet. I know this, having spent a month in India at the ashram of an enlightened master. I know this from my yoga teacher.
Who is the enlightened master?
He's called Paramahamsa Nityananda.
Yeah.
He actually has a really amazing YouTube channel, if anyone's interested in checking him out. He's doing absolutely incredible things. You do know? Okay, cool. And he, you know, he speaks a lot about eating meat, and he basically says all of the universe, all of the beings, all of life in all of the dimensions, there is only one law that is in place in the universe. Everything else, we can basically do whatever we want. And because everything is oneness, because we're all one, we're all connected, the only law, the only rule that exists in the universe is that we cannot commit violence against others. Because committing violence, you're essentially committing an act of self-sabotage, because you're committing violence against the oneness.
Yeah.
So anytime that we eat meat or animal products, I mean, in India, they drink milk, but these cows are literally worshipped. They are living beautiful lives. And, you know, if some people really feel attracted to drinking milk, I, again, don't think it's optimal for human consumption. But if you are going to drink milk and you're drinking milk from these super happy cows, it's a completely different kind of milk to the kind of factory farmed dairy cow milk that you get. And also, the cows in India are very different. They have these really bony backs, they're huge horns, they're genetically very different to the dairy cows that have been bred. I read a statistic, I think the dairy cows produce something like 10 times more milk than your kind of average, normal, regular cow. So they've been engineered over generations to become this really artificial thing. So the as a result, the milk is obviously going to be completely suboptimal. But anyway, going back to what Swamiji said about eating meat and animal products, and said, essentially, every single time you do, you're incurring karmic consequences, because you're damaging the one, you're committing an act of violence against the one. And it's only due to our own lack of awareness, to our own, the fact that we're stuck in the Maya, in the illusion. It's only our lack of awareness that stops us from understanding this really basic fact of reality. He says it's the only and, you know, the number one rule that we have to think about in the universe. Everything else, we have complete freedom, complete, you know, free will to do whatever we want.
What was that question that you asked?
Yeah. Why do you think there is so much confusion around what the right diet is now? Because in nature, no animal has any doubt as to what serves them best.
Of course, yeah.
And then there's us there with so many, there's hundreds and hundreds of different diets. What's the best diet for this? Well, we're supposed to be the most intelligent species, but yet we can't even figure out what works best for our own bodies.
I think true.
It's more a case of if everybody just concentrated on getting back to nature, whether that's involves a little bit of meat or not, if everybody just worked on connecting to themselves more, especially in the Western world, instead of just living externally all the time, that they might find their roots in a natural way and what serves them.
I think that's a huge, huge step. And if anyone is looking to start cleaning up their diet, the number one thing to do is to cut out processed food.
Yeah.
So, you know, that is the number one step. And then once you start making your own food, there are steps you can then kind of climb towards the sort of pyramid of health, as it were. And I think the reason that there's so much confusion is because our bodies are so complex and there's so much going on that it's very difficult to truly listen to your body. You know, it takes someone who's very present, someone who's very aware of their body, to truly understand the messages of the body. For instance, you know, when I started my vegan diet, I felt absolutely amazing. But within 2 or 3 months, I started getting really bad skin problems. If I'd looked at it from a kind of short-sighted perspective, I could have said, well, this is obviously the vegan diet. Yeah. It's not good for me. It's giving me skin problems. I should stop this vegan diet. And then I probably would have stopped it. The detox would have stopped, and then my skin problems would have stopped. But that's not the issue. You know, the reason why a lot of people, for instance, go on a detox, or they do a fast, or they start eating cleaner, and they start to feel worse to begin with, because their body is purging a lot of toxins, is having to readjust to a much more, you know, high fiber diet. There are so many things going on. Like, actually, they'll, you know, it's really difficult to know whether what we're doing is right or not, because your body might not tell you what you think it's telling you. You know, it can be very subtle, the message of the body sometimes, which is why the more we fast, the more we cleanse ourselves, the more we become in tune with nature and the foods that we're naturally meant to eat, the more the body's signals become super clear. So for me now, I know exactly what my body's telling me. If I eat something that's too high in fat or too high in salt, I instantly feel it. I instantly start feeling the mucus building up in my throat. If I have a meal that is anything below par, I then have to kind of spit out mucus for the next 20 minutes or 30 minutes. And it's clear that my body just said, nope, that created mucus in me. And, you know, but it's taken me, you know, at least 3-4 years and 2 years of practicing the mucus's diet healing system to get to this stage. It certainly didn't happen to begin with. And you mentioned earlier the importance of a transition. And I think this is hugely important. A lot of people, and you know, I was guilty of this mistake. I went from eating a diet very high in meat. I'd already cut out dairy actually a couple of years before that, because I became allergic to it. Just overnight, my body just went no more, couldn't have dairy anymore. And I cut out meat very, you know, quickly. And that's why I had quite an intense reaction to the vegan diet. You know, a lot of people have a more gradual entry into veganism, and they don't suffer anywhere near as many, or if any at all, kind of detox symptoms. So the transition diet is hugely important. And actually, the mucus's diet healing system essentially is a lesson in how to transition, because everything needs to happen gradually. And a lot of people fast, but their ego gets in the way. You know, they've never fasted before, but they suddenly decide to do a 20-day water fast, or you know, I recently did a 7-day dry fast, and lots of people messaging me, I want to do a 7-day dry fast. Never done a day of fasting in their life. because we want to get clean, we want to see results, but we want them now, you know, and that's not how the body works, because it's taken a lifetime of slowly, incrementally becoming more and more unhealthy, more and more obstructed, having more and more mucus, our GI tract, you know, having more and more uneliminated waste gathering there. So we have to reverse that process slowly to kind of unwind that. And in the Mucus's Diet Healing System, actually Arnold Ehret tells you exactly how to transition, tells you exactly what to eliminate. And it very much depends on the different body type that you have. So there are some people who we would, using our kind of modern scientific language, would say they have a high metabolism. And these people tend to be very lean. They can eat anything they want and not put on any weight. And actually what's happening, these people are very acidic, but they haven't taken on a lot of mucus. So they're kind of an acidic body type. You then have the people that we would say have low metabolism. And actually what's happening is that they're just a very mucusy body type. And their body, instead of storing the acid, you know, in its own system, in its own blood, and just becoming more and more acidic, stows away the toxins and the acidity within the fat cells themselves. And those are the kind of people that are obese and struggle to maintain their weight. And these two types of body types need to fast and need to transition very differently. So a person with a mucus type body that's overweight could actually fast a lot more effortlessly than somebody who's naturally very lean, because the acidic body type person that is very lean is going to start experiencing detox symptoms very quickly. So they need a much more gentle and gradual approach. So a transition diet has to be tailor-made for your body, and you have to take the time to really understand the process and not rush into it.
Yeah, makes sense.
What about metabolic typing? I know you've touched on different areas of the world, but that's quite a big thing in science now, that people should eat based on their blood type and that sort of thing. Do you simply just dismiss that and think that that isn't the case based on our roots in the tropics? That is our baseline of being based upon that.
That's what I believe. But I do think there is some truth. You know, people have had good results from following a metabolic diet or a blood diet type diet. And I think the reason they work is because we all have certain traits. So, for instance, let's say you have a certain blood type. You might be more likely to store acid in your body or to become a mucus type body. So perhaps by eliminating certain foods, you're helping your body out, you know, and it is doing some good. But the way I see it, it can only be a kind of a temporary plaster. It can never be something that can truly get to the root of the issue. Yeah. It's not something that will actually get you to the point where you're eliminating mucus, where you're beginning to reverse all of the damage that we've done.
Have
you heard of have you looked into any of the work of a guy called Weston A. Price?
I've heard of him, but I haven't looked in any great depth, so do tell me.
Without going into too much detail, he's got a book called Nutrition and Degeneration, and he was a dentist in the 1920s, and basically in this book he summarizes that he went traveling across the globe to different native people that were still living completely off land. There were some native tribes that had introduced a more of a, what they call white man diet or white man foods. So like the processed foods like bread, pasteurized milk, etc. But what he found was there was not one single tribe still living off the land that had a completely meat-free diet. There were some that come very close, but they'd still have a lot of the people living in the mountains in India, but they were still having like 10% meat. And then he found that basically what he said, he came up with the principle of the four white devils. That's flour, sugar, table salt, and pasteurized milk. And he says as soon as the native people started to introduce those type of foods, he saw a lot of degeneration, cavities, a lot of dental problems, jaws misaligning, and a lot of disease started to set in. Whereas the people still living off land still had top health. They had obviously didn't brush their teeth the way we do, and they had like optimal health, bright white teeth. So what would you take? I'd encourage everybody listening as well just to look at that look into that work, because a lot of that has been suppressed. But again, I think it comes down to the quality if you are eating meat. So it has to be, which it's a struggle today to find optimal quality meat with any animal food.
I think there's a lot of wisdom in what you just said. I don't think it's the entire truth, but I think it's very much getting there. And I think what I really admire about it is this, the scientific approach of actually going out and looking at nature, looking at humans in all different types of the world, looking at what they're eating and observing the effects of various foods, doing small experiments. Let's add this. Let's remove this. What happens then? And, you know, this is what Arnold Eric did in the mucus-assist diet eating system. He figured this out all by himself through a process of experimentation. He then experimented with his patients, and there, you know, he had tens of thousands of patients. And over time, this is a truly scientific approach. Yeah. And, you know, Price did a similar thing. You know, he went out and, you know, lived with indigenous tribes and observed their diets, observed their habits. And I have to say, all four of those things, so what they were, flour, refined sugar, milk. What were the other two? Yes.
And table salt.
And table salt. Those four things, I would say, are by far the worst, killers. They literally are. I would eliminate all four of those things before I would eliminate meat, you know, in terms of your health. And dairy products are incredibly acid-forming and mucus-forming, as are eggs. A lot of people don't know this, but egg whites are incredibly mucus-forming, far too high in protein for humans. Whereas meat actually tends to eliminate a lot easier, especially if it's eaten alongside a diet of, you know, of roughage, of leaves. You know, I say to people, if you do want to eat meat, if it still feels like it's something that you're drawn to, by all means, go ahead and do what feels right to you. But when you do eat meat, always eat the best, the highest quality meat you can get. When you do eat it, offer some gratitude for the soul of the animal, for the gift that they've given you. Be present with what you're eating. Think about where the meat came from. And also always accompany it with fiber. So if you're going to have a steak or something, have a massive side salad full of spinach, which is incredibly high in fiber, you know, lettuce, broccoli, things like this, you know, roughage to help the meat pass through you. And again, eat it no more than once or twice a week. Certainly don't eat meat every day like I used to. It's very acid forming, generally speaking. And, you know, I bet you those indigenous tribes probably would, you know, go and do a hunt or whatever and come back with a few animals, and the animals would be shared amongst the whole tribe. And, you know, maybe only once or twice a week they would have a big ceremony where they'd eat the meat. Or even if they eat meat once a day, they'd probably get a much smaller portion of meat by the time it's all been spread out amongst everybody than we would eat. You know, like some of the steaks I see people eating are just absolutely ginormous. And again, this is not what we would be doing in nature. Not at all.
No, there's a massive problem, I think, with just the general, the minds and level of consciousness of certain people and society at large when it comes to food. And obviously this then plays on, it plays hand in hand, health and obviously what we consume on a daily basis with the emotions that we feel. It's like a feedback loop. So people just start feeling and thinking the same.
I remember when I stopped eating meat, it was about 5 years ago, and I got less angry. And I didn't know whether it was because I didn't know which way to catch 22, whether it was because I stopped eating meat or whether I stopped getting angry that I come off. I don't know either way, I'm not sure, but
yeah,
I felt different energy coming into me when I stopped eating meat. So I think it's definitely worthwhile people just trying it, give it a month or so and just see how your body reacts to it, you know?
Absolutely. I mean, that's how I became a vegan. I went through a phase of kind of doing, it initially started about 7 or 8 years ago. I started doing a dry January. So for 3 or 4 years, I did a dry January and I would stop, you know, I'd stop smoking weed, I'd stop drinking, I'd stop all of it. And I would always feel amazing. And, you know, every year I'd kind of add a new thing. So I then, you know, did some kind of juicing. And then, you know, 4 years ago, I thought, that's it, I'm going to try a vegan diet for a month. And at the end of that month, I felt so good. I'm talking so good. Like I was having blissful dreams. I was having these incredible synchronicities happening in my life. Everything was just guiding me to stay on the vegan diet, which I did. And I never went back. So you know, sometimes an experiment can be so profoundly transformative. Don't be afraid of giving things a go. And I totally resonate with what you say about feeling peaceful after quitting eating meat. I have a peace in my life that just wasn't present there before. And I totally used to get that kind of anger when I wasn't getting the food I wanted, or I wasn't getting, you know, when I needed my food, you know,
yeah.
Get out of my way or
food
I'm going to.
Food is an addiction as well, isn't it? Yeah. Food is an addiction. I mean, it's the same as smoking. It's people fulfill the emotions that they're missing or struggling to, the blockages that they're getting, they'll fill that with food. I mean, I think I'd probably say I have a food addiction myself, to be fair. I eat a lot, probably too much of my body needs. With fruit, would you eat, for example, in one meal, would you eat one piece of fruit, for example, two bananas in one meal, or would you have a banana, a bunch of grapes, a plum, for example? I don't know whether to a meal of it or just have one piece of fruit, do you know what I mean?
You've hit on a really important point there, actually. And eating only one type of fruit at a time, it's called having a mono meal. And when you're eating a mono meal of fruit, the body recognizes that it's just one fruit, and it's super easy to digest. If you're eating lots of different types of fruits all mixed up, the body's got to find all sorts of different digestive enzymes for each different type of fruit, and it's much more complicated. Also, fruits don't always combine well. So for instance, sweet fruits like dates and bananas don't combine well with citrus fruits or sub-acid fruits like strawberries and, you know, because the acidity and the sugar kind of counteract each other and you can get some bloating. So I personally tend to eat just mono meals. And whenever I eat mixtures of fruits, I always feel slightly less good than when I eat just the one type of fruit. However, that doesn't mean just eat one banana. Like if you're going to eat a meal of bananas, I would say, depending on the size of the banana, I would eat probably three or four bananas. In one meal, yeah. Right. And if I was, because think about it, one banana is just a snack. If you want to have bananas for your lunch, you want to sit with a bunch of bananas and you want to eat until you feel satisfied. So let's say you're a guy who's at the gym and he's working out a lot. That might even be seven or eight bananas for you, you know.
I'm going to speak with science here. That's going to be a potassium smash, isn't it? You're going to get absolutely sugared up to the eyeballs. Correct me if I'm wrong here. I'm just throwing science, modern day science. I know it's a load of shit off the top. But you're going to have potassium overload, sugar overload. I mean, tell me where I'm wrong somewhere.
Fructose is the only food that we eat that doesn't require the body to produce insulin in order to digest it. No. So you could eat as many bananas as you want and your body will not release any insulin. So you won't feel that kind of stress response that the body feels every time it's basically having to digest anything. And the blood, the spikes in the blood sugar level are kind of completely normal. And the more you eat fruit, the more you realize that people only get spikes because the body is so not used to eating its normal food. Like I now pretty much live on fruit. I occasionally still have salads. I still eat some cooked food occasionally. But I don't ever feel a spike in my blood sugar level. So I don't feel unwell. So the only reason people feel unwell is just, it's essentially a detox symptom. So if you are eating fruit and you're not feeling terribly well, slow down, have a few more veggies, eat more salads. Some people can't even, you know, some people I work with are so poisoned, are so kind of chronically dehydrated and acidic that they can't eat fruit. They can't tolerate them. So they try to eat some fruits and they instantly bloat, or they have some citrus juice and their joints and their bones start aching. You know, a lot of people go to the doctors because they've got arthritis or whatever, and the doctors say to them, stop eating citrus, and they instantly feel better. They don't understand that what's happening actually is that the citrus juice is, you know, assisting with the symptom. That's why they're getting the arthritis. It's a sign from the body. But, you know, to those people, I would say eat cooked fruit, eat some stewed fruit, eat some baked apples. You can eat baked bananas, and they're less detoxing than fruit, and your body can handle it better. But personally, I think the whole kind of fear mongering around sugar is completely incorrect. So by all means, you know, cut out table sugar, cut out all kind of glucose, all kind of artificial sugar, because they are really toxic to the body. But fruit, which is, you know, as natural as it gets, we can eat in an abundance of fruits without having any problems. It's our natural diet. It really is.
Go on. Ross, still occasionally you eat meat, don't you?
Yeah, I've definitely I really try and avoid any commercially farmed meat now, and I have reduced my meat intake quite considerably, and I always try and buy organic when it's available. But I do still, whether I'm still stuck in the physical because of my job as a health coach and in the training industry, and just by knowing myself, whether it's in my mind, I don't know. But I do feel quite considerably weaker when I cut meat out completely. So I do feel it just gives me that satisfaction in myself and in my body physically. If I feel like I'm breaking it down, I just need that kind of. And I know that sounds like a really carnivorous approach, and it is always going on at me as well. But it's just what at the moment feels naturally to me. And I have over the last couple of years, I have changed my eating a little bit, and I've been a lot more conscious of how much meat I'm eating. And I think everybody should look into how much meat they're consuming, and a lot of the time cases it is too much. Mm. But how would you say it fits in from a global point of view? If everybody, say tomorrow, everybody started doing the fruitarian approach, could it sustain itself in terms of, I mean, there's that much agriculture today. I mean, everything's farmed, everything's mass produced, pesticide use. I mean, could you have good quality organic fruit and vegetables to provide for the whole planet, I guess is the question. And I know that wouldn't happen. I'm just saying, I know that's I'm very far away from that, and it would be a slow transition. But
I think if that, you know, I personally think that we're heading that way because the whole world is waking up. And I think, within a couple of generations, I think pretty much the whole world will be vegan, apart from a very small proportion of people. And I think it will happen gradually, you know. So we're seeing now, you know, most of my friends who are fruitarians are either constantly traveling, and if they're not traveling the majority of the time, they're certainly leaving the UK and Europe and America during the winter months and heading to Thailand and the tropics. Most fruitarians I know live in a place where tropical fruit, you know, high quality tropical fruit is wildly abundant.
Yeah.
And, you know, I do think we're going to see a lot of movement of people away from the colder climates back towards the hotter climates. That is going to happen. And I do think that as the world is waking up, as there's a decline in the demand for meat, a lot of the land that is currently being used for rearing livestock and stuff is going to be turned into kind of fruit orchards. And I genuinely think that's going to happen. I think a lot of people are going to start growing their own fruit. And I think there's actually a really beautiful movement. There are some people who are planting fruit trees just out of their own pocket, you know, just going around the world planting fruit trees that are local to that area. And just, it would be beautiful to make the world a garden again, you know.
Maybe they can start teaching that in schools.
Yeah, I think that would make a massive difference. And imagine a world where there would be, you know, no poverty and no starvation, you know, because there are just so many abundantly, you know, available fruits for everybody to eat. And I mean, imagine if all the people in Africa could just eat their mangoes, you know, rather than them being shipped out to all over the world. That would be nice. People should eat, you know, as much as possible local available fruits. But in the UK, you know, I went to a market yesterday. What was there available? Just some apples and some local pressed apple juice. That was literally the only fruit that was available in the UK. So we have to rely on imports of oranges and bananas and whatever from other countries.
Would you highly recommend organic fruits? Because there's a lot of fruit that isn't organic, isn't it? And you don't know where it's come from.
I think the whole organic thing is a great movement because it's a movement towards awakening, towards looking at what we're putting into the soil, how we're treating the planet. But as with everything, it's not a black and white thing. You know, there are lots of fruits that are not organic, but are actually a much higher quality fruit than its organic counterpart. So I think when it comes to fruit, always try and find organic, but always look first and foremost to the quality of the fruit. And how can you tell if the fruit is high quality? How does it look? How does it smell? You know, how attractive is it to you? You know, I went through a phase of getting organic watermelons, and when I cut them open, they were this kind of really translucent pink inside, and they didn't taste particularly sweet. I then, you know, went down the road to my local Turkish greengrocers, where they just had these incredible watermelons straight from Turkey. And, you know, the guy knew the farm that they came from, and he said, they're not organic, but, you know, it's my cousin's next door neighbor's farm or whatever. And I know that they didn't use any pesticides. And these watermelons were vibrant red, sweet as you'd like, really juicy. That fruit is always going to be a better quality fruit than the organic, kind of less attractive fruit. But I think when it comes to things like vegetables, salads, leaves, it's much more important that these are organic, because they're much more likely to have been directly sprayed. Whereas a fruit tree will have kind of filtered a lot of the toxins, because the majority of the spray usually goes into the ground. They're not going to sit there and spray, you know, each of the cherries or whatever.
I think that's one of the problems I have with the categorization of like veganism and vegetarianism, is that I think a lot of people do it just to fit into a certain category, instead of actually just connecting to the body and finding out what's right for their body. I feel like they're trying to do it in a fashion kind of sense. If you look further into it, obviously, if you're vegetarian or vegan and you're not eating, concentrating on eating better quality and organic, like how far do you go in terms of, if you're using heavy pesticides, then the bugs on a large scale that you're killing off that affect the soil quality and stuff like that. And a guy who I follow, Paul Check, you might have heard of him. I'm quite heavily influenced by his work. And he says on one of his blogs, like, how far do you go? So if somebody shrunk your dog down to the size of a bug, and somebody stepped on it, would you still be upset? I know it's a different scenario, but that's just what the point I'm trying to make in terms of vegetarians not concentrating on the quality of the food and just trying to be vegetarian to sit into a certain category or like a certain identity for themselves. I just wish people would connect more to themselves.
It's important to be authentic, and it's important to do things for the right reasons. But I think, you know, so long as people are trying and trying their best, that's all that matters. Yeah. What's important is just that people are informed. You know, it's very easy to hear something and just take it at face value, or to hear a really convincing and very rhetorical video on YouTube and just consider it as fact just because the person's convincing. Do some research. When someone claims something, don't just take it at face value. Go and read up around it. And I truly believe we all have an internal moral and kind of compass of truth inside of us. You know, very often the more cleaner we become, the more present we become, the more we meditate and wake up to our kind of true selves, the more we can just tell when something is true or not. You know, and my intuition now, having been cleaning my diet and having been fasting for all these years, is incredibly strong now. And I can sometimes read something and I'll just say, nah, that's bullshit. And I'll just know it, you know. And so follow your instincts, listen to your body, but also be discerning, do research. And, you know, one thing, I was going to say this earlier, but I didn't get a chance. When, or I forgot, or whatever. When you said that you know, whenever you cut out meat, you don't feel as good. You know, you feel weaker. You feel more tired, whatever. I think a lot of this is due to the fact that meat is a stimulant. So there's a part of you that's obviously kind of got used to having this stimulating substance in your diet. So there will be, if you were to cut out meat, there would be a sort of a transition phase through which you would have to kind of go through. But you'll find that at the other side of it, on the other side of it, you'll have boundless strength and energy, much more than you have now. It's kind of like a small dip you have to go through before you kind of come out through the other end. But another reason, you know, this is happening is because anytime we eliminate anything from our body which is obstructing or acid forming, anything that's essentially bad for our body, we have to go through a kind of a detox phase. And when we do detox, we are going to feel somewhat unwell. However, we can mitigate this with fasting, and you can really mitigate the symptoms. So just because something's happening in the short term, it doesn't mean it's going to happen in the long term. So don't be afraid of experimenting with it and just giving it a go. And, you know, there's a lot of kind of meat eating within the fitness industry, but there's actually a huge kind of growth as well in the whole vegan and plant-based fitness industry. So don't be too attached to this idea or image of you having to be any certain way. You can be and you can shape your business in any way around the person that you are. So I think, you know, anyone who wants to give veganism a try, I would highly recommend that they do check out the Mucus Diet Healing System. It is the original vegan diet. It, you know, it really is. And the book is quite old. It was written at the end of the 1900s. Arnold Eric died in a kind of a freak, strange accident. He died far too young. I think he was in his 40s when he died, or 50s, but he died in the sort of 1920s. So the book is actually quite old, but you'll read it and the truths are absolutely timeless. And, you know, there are a lot of diets out there. So there's the paleo diet, there's, you know, all these kind of different types of diets. And when I read the Mucus's Diet Healing System, I realized, wow, every single diet that touches on a facet of the truth, you know, the diets that say, oh, eliminate grains, or eat more fruits and vegetables, or eat natural food versus processed food, or eat less of this, eat more of that. Every single one is just a facet of the Mucus's Diet Healing System, which actually shows you the whole picture. So the reason some diets work, but then they have other limitations, you know? So
like
with eliminating grains, you know?
Yeah. Would you say that the people that do approach a vegetarian or vegan diet and they don't have the desired effects, and advantages that they expect, would you put that solely down to the detoxification process? And say if they do feel naturally, would you pin it down to that? Or, and I know a lot of people go vegetarian, but then they end up still eating processed foods. That's the problem.
Oh yeah, there are so many junk food vegans out there. You know, it's not the solution. It really isn't. I would say if anything, it's probably healthier to eat a diet that still has some animal products and meat, but is otherwise really clean and natural than to eat a really junk food vegan diet, high in grains and fat. I really would. Obviously, from a spiritual perspective, I think the sooner that one can eliminate meat, the sooner one can start really accessing higher energy, vibrational kind of spaces. But that's kind of a separate issue.
I agree with that. I'm still pinned on the fact that it has to come naturally from within, like an inner calling, and I feel like I am going that way, but it's just not quite there yet.
I think there's a lot of resistance that we experience anytime that we are on the verge of doing something that is really truly life transformative, and there's something, it's like a deep pattern of self-sabotage that all of us have, that anytime that we're on the verge of doing something majorly cool, we stop ourselves. We kind of don't want to go there because we're almost afraid of our own success, or almost afraid of how good life could be on the other side of this, you know? And sure, a lot of the kind of negative experiences people have when they first try giving up meat or other things are to do with the detox. That's largely what's happening on a physical kind of 3D level. Yeah. But we have all these different bodies, right? We've got our physical body, we've got our emotional body, we've got our spiritual body. And actually, you touched on this earlier, so much of the eating that we do is down and due to emotions. We pretty much eat to numb ourselves. And the more we're trying to stifle, the more we're trying to suppress emotionally, the more we're going to eat, and the heavier that food is, and the more damaging that food is to our system. So naturally, the more we love ourselves, the more we're kind of ready to let go of some of these patterns and these emotional sort of cul-de-sacs that we find ourselves in, the more and more we gravitate towards a lighter diet, because the less we eat, the more of these emotions are going to come up. So a lot of people feel negative physical symptoms, but actually what's much worse and much more debilitating, and what most people can't cope with and they're completely unprepared for, is the emotional detox that happens. And this can manifest as a physical detox. So some people might feel like they're so tired they can't get out of bed, but what's actually happening is an emotional response, and they're essentially undergoing a deep depression, which kind of has its physical manifestation as ME, or as, you know, so tired I can't leave the house.
Yeah. My partner, funny you should say that, because my partner in the last 6 weeks or so has actually been, Western medicine's turned around and said, we don't know, it's probably ME. So I've passed the book that you recommended, the healing system. I passed it over to her very recently. So I'll let you know how that goes.
Yeah. That's amazing. Mm. I wish her all the best. And if she she wants to get in touch with me, I'm more than happy to.
Oh, thank you for that. Yeah,
to help her.
She's vegan. She's been vegan for years. Quite switched on and everything, but sort of come down in her like a ton of bricks.
The more inner work we do, the more we hit these kind of crisis points, you know. And the crisis points are actually an amazing time of healing. And a lot of the time people look at them as a negative thing. So let's say you cut out meat and you're feeling a bit weak and you're not feeling great. People go, oh, this is bad. But actually it's a really good thing. It's your body talking to you. It's your body actually doing something about it. And the fact that your partner's reached this kind of tipping point, because she's either going to have to get through it somehow or she's going to be in bedbound, right? So it's her body and her soul, her higher self, directing her towards taking some change. Because quite often on a vegan diet, particularly if, you know, you're still eating grains, if a lot of the vegan food is cooked, you know, if food combinations aren't optimal, you know, we're going to plateau, you know, and then actually perhaps even start kind of going back downwards again. So it's really important that we constantly continue improving and improving and improving, because, you know, the things that I was eating a year ago, I'm not eating now. And I'm not even craving now. And some of the things that I would enjoy a year ago, if I were to eat now, my body would instantly reject. You know, I'd start having a skin rash, or I would get really bloated, or I would get lots of gas, or I'd sleep really badly, or I'd oversleep. You know, like this, the results are instantly obvious to me. Mm. So we've got to constantly kind of chip away, chip away, chip away. And if we don't do that, the body starts sending us signals. So what's likely is that she's plateaued, and the body's just saying to her, you need to stop this, you need to eliminate this, yeah. Or, you know, you need to start meditating, or you need to start, you know, moving your body more, whatever it is.
Yeah, yeah. You seem quite spiritually aware. You mentioned earlier about plant medicines. What experience have you got with that?
I have quite extensive experience with plant medicines. I've been smoking weed since I was about 18, on and off, and you know, it's only until very recently that I started seeing that as a plant medicine. That used to just be drugs to me, but that's very much a plant medicine. And actually I look at the effect it's had on my life, and weed has taught me, marijuana I should call it, has taught me an awful lot. I've also had some incredible experiences with ayahuasca, and also DMT, just like the smoke kind of DMT. But I mean, I highly recommend ayahuasca because it's done in a really ceremonial setting. And I, you know, if anyone's interested, don't just do it. Don't just order it online and do it at home. Go and see a shaman, do it in the proper setting. I've done 15 separate ceremonies over the course of 2 or 3 years. Mm-hmm. And they've had profoundly transformative effects on my life, on how I interact with others, on how I see myself, on my energy. I've also done mushrooms, again, not with a shaman, but with friends, or, you know, in kind of nature, in beautiful settings. And again, lots of lessons coming from there. But if I'm going to be perfectly honest, by far the biggest teacher for me in terms of plant medicine has been fruit. It's taught me so much about loving myself, about trusting nature, about trusting in, you know, in my body, in my body's intuition, trusting in my senses, the kind of clarity that I've had from doing fruit cleanses and fruit fasts has been profound. So it's funny how a lot of people think of plant medicines and they think, you know, ayahuasca or, you know, whatever. And whilst I highly recommend anyone who feels in any way curious about those kinds of things to go and investigate, because if you feel drawn to it, if you feel called to it, if there's a kind of something, if there's a pull there for you, you know, investigate that, because there could be some magic at the other end of that rainbow. But equally, don't underestimate just the simple power of all plants to teach us lessons.
Yeah, agreed. So thanks for your time, Malice. That's been fantastic. Where could find you, and what are you up to?
Probably Facebook is the easiest. I have a group called Fasting with Alice, and it's a private group. So you can request to join me on there. I post videos and blog posts, and there were discussions about all different types of fasting, and there's a detailed fasting protocol on there, which basically describes everything that I do, everything that beginners could do, anything that kind of intermediate to advanced fasting practitioners can do to join. So yeah, find me on there or just find me on Facebook. It's Alice Coppola, and send me a private message or a friend request. And I'd be more than happy to chat to anyone about the fruit diet or about fasting or the mucuses diet healing system. And yeah, I highly recommend all of you guys to look into Arnold Eret's work. He was an incredibly awake person. I would say that he was very spiritually realized. There's a point in the book at which he describes what is essentially a Kundalini awakening experience that he has after concluding a fast. And, you know, the book is absolutely fascinating. So do check that out. And I can recommend to you some amazing resources online. You know, there are lots of really fascinating YouTube channels of people who are doing really cool stuff, who are really changing the world and really changing themselves. So,
well, let us know through Facebook and we'll pull them all on the show notes and whatever, we'll put them all in.
Yeah, that sounds great. Thank you. And thank you so much for your time, guys.
Thank you. Thanks a lot.
Have a great day.
Thank you. Bye, everyone. Bye.